This is Lindsay Miller, and you're listening to the Arkansas Times Week in Review podcast on Friday, April 27. On this week's edition, we're going to talk about the installation of the second Ten Commandments monument on state capitol grounds, the closure, abrupt closure of the Rep, Supreme Court's recent ruling on sovereign immunity and its potential effects on the pivotal Lakeview school decision, and maybe some more. I'm joined this week again by Benji Hardy. Hey, Benji.
Are we sitting further away from each other than usual?
On purpose. Yeah, it was too intimate last week. We need to divide so we can really amp up the tension.
Yeah, I feel it.
Or something like that. So, on Thursday morning, after a replacement monument to the Ten Commandments was installed at state capitol grounds, State Senator Jason Rapert, who sponsored the enabling legislation to get said monument installed and also created the nonprofit that raised the money for the monument, told a crowd of media supporters, detractors, and onlookers that the monument was not intended to send a religious message, but simply one about history. The ACLU of Arkansas, the Society of Freethinkers,
right,
and the Satanic Temple all say otherwise.
Right. So, long history here. It seems like we've been talking about the Ten Commandments monument for, for years now.
We have.
Did you mention the part about the what happened to monument number one?
No, I was leaving that to you. No. You can remind people.
Well, so in our last installment of the Ten Commandments, last June, less than 24 hours after the monument was erected, a man in a vehicle rammed it late at night, destroying it.
A Dodge Dart.
Yes, an apparently mentally unstable person. He's now, I believe, in the Arkansas State Hospital. Anyway, so to protect it physically, the monument is now, the new version 2.0 of the Ten Commandments is now surrounded by concrete bollards. Is that
a word new to me?
A word I just learned, yes.
Though if you see a bollard, if you see this bollard by the state capitol, you will notice bollards everywhere.
Once you see a bollard, you can't forget it.
Right.
Yeah. As a total aside, which is irrelevant to everything, I have a friend who went into engineering, and I, ever since 9/11, he's told me there's been this whole sort of explosion of this subfield in civil engineering about the construction of such things. I mean, bollards, various things to prevent vehicles or from getting too close to buildings for terrorism threats. So cutting edge technology on display at the state capitol. This at the same time it's being challenged in court.
And would have been challenged the first time around if it had stood for more than 24
correct.
Hours.
I mean, everybody expected last June for this to happen, and then unexpectedly a crazy person drove his car into it. So now we're getting the court challenge that we expected the first time around. Though I don't think anything's been filed yet, as far as I know. One interesting little thing here, the ACLU and the Freethinkers will be filing suit, and the Satanic Temple tells me that they will be joining those suits whenever they are filed as an intervener.
Where's the separate coming from? The ACLU is filing just on First Amendment grounds.
Right. It's not totally clear yet if they and the Freethinkers will be filing jointly or separately. I think they're going to file separately for whatever reason. But the Satanic Temples, I mean, they're asking for something a bit differently, right? The ACLU is saying that the Ten Commandments monument should come down. The Satanic Temple is not saying necessarily that it should come down, just that they want their monument to have a place on the Capitol grounds as well.
And their monument, you'll remember, is a 9-foot bronze statue of the pagan god Baphomet.
I thought it was 10 foot.
Who knows?
Okay,
it's large.
It grows and shrinks according to unknown cosmic forces.
It apparently exists, though.
It does exist. Are you doubting Baphomet's existence?
Well, I haven't seen it with my eyes.
There are pictures. Very empirical of you. he says that it, so the spokesperson for the Satanic Temple, Lucian Greaves, am I saying that correctly?
I think so.
The Baphomet statue is currently housed at their headquarters in Salem, Massachusetts, and he says it is ready to be installed the minute that the legislature and the courts give the go-ahead to have Baphomet sitting on the Capitol grounds.
So the Freethinkers could have a similar case because that group also wanted to get its own monument to atheism or separation of church and state, or they wanted a wall.
Right. Oh, right. The wall. I forgot about the wall.
Free thinking wall.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun times in the courts of Arkansas.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, this is, there's not too much in, to say here other than, because we've seen this story play out before. I mean, it happened in Oklahoma, and that's where the Satanic Temple sort of made a name for itself nationally, because exactly the same thing happened. The Oklahoma legislature, approved the erection of a monument. It was done, and then the Satanic Temple brought a court challenge. The Oklahoma Supreme Court eventually agreed that, well, if you have this Ten Commandments monument, then you must allow other such monuments. Interestingly, something I didn't realize until yesterday is that that all happened under the Oklahoma state constitution. So this was not, a federal lawsuit. It's not a First Amendment issue under the U.S. Constitution. I mean, certainly you could bring a federal civil rights suit about it, but in Oklahoma, this was litigated entirely in the state courts because state constitutions also often have clauses protecting religious liberty. And the Satanic Temple spokesperson claims that the Arkansas state constitution's language is even stronger than Oklahoma's in terms of clearly stating that no law shall be passed that preferences one religious viewpoint over another.
Undoubtedly, this is not the last time we'll talk about it.
Perhaps not.
We will keep you posted. The Arkansas Repertory Theater announced it would effectively close its doors mid-season this week. Board Chairman Elect Ruth Shepard said, or maybe it was Brian Bush, I actually can't remember, when you don't have the money to pay your staff or your vendor, you don't have the ability, your vendors, you don't have the ability to move forward. They reported that the theater is $700,000 in debt. Is that right?
Well, I believe, if I understand them correctly, that they need to raise about $750,000 by August to pay pay vendors, to pay bills. So that's not long-term debt. That's not,
short-term debt.
Debt they own properties and so on. Right. And so it's shorter-term things. It's like basically what they feel they need to make good upon to start with a clean slate in some sort of reimagined form in the fall or whenever. So they are hoping incoming board chair elect Ruth Shepard, that she hopes that some plan will be in place to allow for some sort of opening in the foreseeable future. They are optimistic that the Little Rock artistic and theater communities will step up and come through both on that $750,000 that they need shorter term and also with sort of a longer term plan for how to make things sustainable. She told me, I spoke to her this week, and she said that, that, and there were some of their preliminary discussions that, basically everything is on the table in terms of a re-envisioned rep. But the things that are non-negotiable is they want it to remain a professional nonprofit theater. So in other words, something that is, number one, not a community theater, that is able to hire professional actors and maintain professional staff. And two, that is nonprofit and therefore reasonably affordable to people. And then three, she said that it's financially sustainable moving forward. But she's listed along a bunch of theoreticals about ways that could happen, be it fewer shows, be it different types of shows, be it a partnership with other institutions. But they're going to have to come up with some, very different thinking.
So what do we know about what happened to to get us to this point?
Yes, good question. This was a question we've all been asking here. I mean, the number one thing that they say is simply declining revenue, both in ticket sales and in philanthropic donations. And the rep relies on both as a nonprofit. You know, they say they've just had trouble filling seats, and you know, whether that's due to demographic changes or what, it's hard to say. I mean, everyone we've talked to has cited the new Robinson Center and the fact that there's sort of this, you know, in a small market, having one big new attraction like that with a limited number of theater goers means that can make a difference in their revenue. And they've always been very careful to say, like, we're not blaming Robinson for this. This has been going on for a while. They've seen, you know, the sort of downward trend in growth or in revenue. But, you know, they say, like, sort of when their position is as tenuous as it is, one change in the market environment can really have a big impact.
Well, Leslie Peacock is working on a cover story for next week, so stay tuned for that. But, I mean, just as, you know, someone who's followed the arts community for a number of years, it's a pretty devastating blow to Little Rock. The rep is many decades old. Do you know when it was founded? I can't remember.
It's mid-70s,
yeah. I think. It's a similar age as the Arkansas Toms. You know, it. I'm not sure if Theater Squared in Fayetteville is now a professional theater company, but for a long time, the rep was the only professional theater company in Arkansas. And, you know, I mean, I think they cited community theater as an example, and we have wonderful community theater here. I mean, really top notch, but there's just something special about professional theater. I mean, they cast their shows in New York. They bring people that have been on Broadway down. And, you know, if you haven't been to a rep show, I hope that you'll have the chance to go one day again. But it really, I mean, it's a kind of a cut above. And for Main Street, this would be devastating, I think, after such a, maybe not devastating, but it'd be a pretty big blow after such progress on developing the corridor. You know, all along when developers and the mayor were presenting their vision, the rep was seen as a real cornerstone to what they've called, and I guess what's still being called, the creative corridor.
Right.
The rep was the anchor in that. So, you know, I think a lot of people that have been around the art scene for a long time, it's just kind of hard to wrap your mind around. Personally, it makes me feel bad because it's been a couple years since I've gone to a rep show. Mm. And I'm sure there are a lot of people like me that are thinking, you know, I should have been stepping up.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that happens. Right. You know, it's, as we well know, it is hard to run nonprofits or things whose mission is, you know, to the public good. And
right.
It's hard to make money. It's hard to pay the bills. You know, I'd hate for us to lose this altogether. I think the rep has an advantage. Well, on the one hand, it is difficult to raise money for debt. I think a lot of your big donors are going to be wary of, you know, maybe throwing good money after bad.
Right. Which is why it's so important for them to come up with a plan that makes sense and, you know, is plausible.
Right. But this, judging by the reaction that we've seen and what we've heard from the board, I think there's a lot of energy focused on salvaging it somehow. So I hope they figure it out.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big theater person. I probably also haven't been to a show there in a couple years, I think. And I wouldn't have gone as often as I had if the Arkansas Times hadn't occasionally given me a free ticket to go and preview something. But, you know, it definitely has sort of broader implications, I feel like, even for people that aren't in the theater scene, as far as just, like, the idea of the city and, you know, as you say, with the city of Little Rock's invested so much in this idea of revitalization of downtown. I think that it gives a sense, I mean, of like, is the artistic community in general, you know, able to survive in a place like Little Rock, able to thrive in a city this size?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people that were citing the death of at least Little Rock Run River Fest and the death of the Little Rock Film Fest in conjunction with this, that Little Rock doesn't support the arts. I think those are both pretty significantly different cases.
Right.
And you can explain why they went away in ways maybe you can't with the rep. But anyway, let's leave it there and move on. Take a quick break and endorse the growing Arkansas Times podcast network. We have three other podcasts that we'd commend to you. Two happen to be on hiatus. No Small Talk, the entertainment podcast, I don't think recorded this week. Stephanie Smittle, the regular host, had to be out. And The Conversation with Matt Price has been on an April hiatus while Matt did some travel and work, but plans to pick up in May. Right now, though, please, if you haven't already, check out Rock the Culture, hosted by Antoine Phillips, a local lawyer and activist, and often by Representative Charles Blake in a co-hosting spot. They do some topical stuff at the top of the show. Generally, the show is about Black culture in Little Rock, and so that's news and people and politics and entertainment. So they talk about what's going on in the world in the first part, and then they interview somebody. They had Tracy Ann Nelson from the Arkansas Education Association last week, and yeah, so check it out. You can find it wherever you get your podcast networks, podcast subscriptions. So for our last topic, the Supreme Court's recent ruling on sovereign immunity probably won't undo Lakeview. Attorneys from the Bureau of Legislative Research said this week in a legislative hearing, but it could halt future cases on education funding, depending on what precedents the court sets in the coming days, weeks, months.
Right. Yeah. So this is, I mean, this is one of these topics where I feel like for people who are within the sort of world of policy, everything you said just makes total sense, and everything for people that aren't, it's just gibberish. Like what the hell is Lakeview? To people in the education world, it's sort of everything is the answer. It's because it is this, in the same way that Brown v. Board of Education or Roe v. Wade or other, you know, U.S. Supreme Court decisions have sort of sculpted this whole landscape in a particular policy arena. Lakeview was decided by the Arkansas Supreme Court in the early 2000s, and it has really I think in its time, it really kind of defined state politics in a way, because it had such monumental impact on the state budget, and then it continues to do that, in that public schools are by far the largest part of the Arkansas state budget. And just recently also we've seen such a wave of activism sweep the country in West Virginia and Oklahoma, now in Arizona and Colorado, as teachers take to the streets protesting low pay. Which is all comes back to education funding. I mean, education funding is teacher pay, really, because when you're paying for schools, you're paying for staff, and thus the staff are teachers. So what Lakeview did was mandate that the legislature fund schools adequately, and that adequacy is determined by a process that happens every couple of years before the legislature enters regular session. And it sort of sets a formula that says, well, we have to bump up school funding by a certain amount to meet needs in this or that area. Often it's not enough, but I would say in general it's not enough. But the flaw though the process is, it does ensure that there's something like a cost of living increase to education in Arkansas, and that has perhaps made Arkansas schools less susceptible to the budget crises that we've seen in places like Kansas and Oklahoma. Anyhow, but the relevant part in terms of what's happened recently with sovereign immunity is that Lakeview is brought about by the Lakeview School District, which has since been merged with another district, but a small, poor district in Phillips County, suing about whether or not the state's funding to public schools is adequate. Well, in January of this year, the state Supreme Court said in a totally different case that the sovereign immunity clause in the state constitution has been misinterpreted by previous Supreme Courts for decades, and that really the state is far more immune from lawsuit than other courts had ruled. And therefore, the state typically cannot be made a defendant in a court case. Well, so then that started, you know, people have been thinking, well, what does that mean for Lakeview, this case in which the state was sued successfully and a previous state Supreme Court about 15 years ago decided that the legislature had to come up with this whole new funding model to make good on the outcome of that case. Does it mean that Lakeview itself is no longer good law? Well, the attorneys from the Bureau of Legislative Research said, basically, don't get ahead of yourselves. No, it doesn't mean that Lakeview is now irrelevant. For one thing, the sovereign immunity case that the Supreme Court recently decided was really all about a statute that the legislature passed, which waived the sovereign immunity provision, and the Supreme Court said the legislature can't do that. It can't waive sovereign immunity. The Lakeview case involved one constitutional claim, you know, so it's not a statute, that was not a statutory matter. It was a constitutional matter, and that's a pretty major difference. And one thing that people are going to be watching closely in the coming months is like, how does the state Supreme Court handle these cases where the state of Arkansas is being sued about something, on constitutional grounds? Because if the state constitution in one part says the state can't be sued, that's sovereign immunity, but in another part it says the state must do X, like provide an adequate public education, and you have these two different constitutional provisions that are kind of bumping up against one another, and which one comes out on top in that case. So,
and interestingly enough, the test case may be an appeal on the wording of some medical marijuana cultivation licenses that the case was decided by Pulaski Circuit Judge Wendell Griffin, who, as we've talked about many times on the podcast, is suing the Arkansas Supreme Court and its justices. So.
Right. So many things happening with sovereign immunity, it's hard to keep track of it all. Because when the Supreme Court said that in January, like, and here's the weird thing. It's like the state constitution is very clear in the language, like that about sovereign immunity. It simply says that it says the state may not be made a defendant or shall not be made a defendant in any of her courts or something like that. So it seems like that says like you can't ever sue the state for any reason whatsoever. I mean, that's what it appears to say. And these attorneys from the Bureau of Legislative Research that were kind of briefing a legislative committee about this issue as it pertains to Lakeview went into some of that. And one of the interesting things they said is there are only a couple other states that have that language in their constitutions that are that clear. Like, most states have a sovereign immunity provision, but few of them are as sort of, you know, stern and clear-cut sounding as that. West Virginia and Alabama were the two that he cited. But even in those cases, like, typically the state Supreme Courts there have not interpreted that never to really mean never, because just to say the state can never be sued under any circumstances would be hard to imagine.
We're imagining it right now. All right, well, let's move on to endorsements. Okay. What do you have this week, Benji?
I have something this week. Great. I actually do. So I went last weekend with a group of friends to Contiki African Restaurant.
Yeah. We reviewed it.
Have we?
Yeah. Positively.
In Alexander. I thought it was great. West African food, which is just it's a cuisine you rarely find in most parts of the country. I mean, it can be kind of challenging for Americans. It's just like, I mean, there are certain foods that seem to take off and others that don't. And West African restaurants, unlike, say, Ethiopian restaurants, I mean, have not really been I mean, you don't see them too often. So I really like West African food, probably because I had the chance to spend a little time in Ghana once many years ago. So it's really exciting to me to eat plantains and yams and so forth.
What else? What was your main course?
Well, I went with a ton of people, so we all ordered different things and shared it. There was, I think I had some okra stew with beef and chicken.
Yummy.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds great. I'll do two quick plugs for things, endorsements of such. I would commend everyone our Academic All-Stars issue this week. It's the 24th edition. We started it because we thought that kids who were achieving at a high level academically and also doing all sorts of other things weren't getting the attention they deserved. You know, you always read about kids excelling in sports or kids screwing up, but not often about kids just really excelling. So it is always such a fun issue to do. The kids are just out of sight bright, and we do 200 word profiles on all of them. So please check that out. We just had our ceremony at UA Little Rock. UA Little Rock's been our partner in this since the beginning. So appreciate that. Ceremony where they all came and got plaques and we got to talk to them. And yeah, makes me feel really bad about what a slacker I was in high school. Also, the Arkansas Literary Festival is going on. It started Thursday, but really tomorrow is the big day. So check out the lineup. I think it's ArkansasLiteraryFestival.org. Easily findable in Google. I'm going to be doing a moderating a discussion with Anthony DeCurtis, the longtime Rolling Stone contributor who wrote an eponymous Lou Reed biography. And so it's going to be good. I interviewed him for the paper a couple weeks ago, and he's very sharp. The book's good. Lou Reed is a fascinating character. So come out. It's at 11:30 tomorrow in the Bobby Roberts Library, which is the Butler Center, also the kind of newish, crazy looking building next to the library. And then there's a Lou Reed tribute at Four Quarter later on Saturday, and I'm told that DeCurtis is going to sing a little bit.
No, what song? Do we know?
I did know, but I've forgotten.
There's a lot of bad Lou Reed songs.
Yeah,
just in my
was not super familiar with his oeuvre beyond Transformer and obviously Velvet Underground, but there's some good ones that I didn't know about.
Oh yeah,
Coney Island Babies.
I love Coney Island Baby.
It's a great album, song. But the whole album I think is pretty good. Yeah, I was just listening.
Berlin. I mean, I love the album Berlin. Though it's not super weird.
Not loved in its time.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it has some
dark.
Pretty horrifically dark moments on it. But, yeah, I don't know. He was very prolific post Velvet Underground. You know, he put out a ton of stuff, including a lot of like weirdly redundant live albums that were just like.
I think he made some money on the live albums.
I believe so. And I remember, I mean, like Lou Reed, The Velvet Underground, I remember when I was in high school, was one of the first bands that I, you know, discovered sort of as a getting out there and moving beyond my brother's cassette collection. And I really fell in love with Lou Reed. And I remember him also being like the first artist I kind of had to become disillusioned with, just realizing like, not everything by this person is a hit.
It's a complicated man.
Complicated man.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcast source. We will be back next week. Thanks for being here, Benji.
Thank you, Lindsay.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.